Welcome to Feel Over Reels, a podcast where we discuss movies, video games, TV shows, and whatever we feel like talking about. I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Gastar.
Hey, guys.
And Ron Newman.
Hey, how's it going?
Today's episode, we're going to talk about Season 2 of Invincible, also Alex Garland's Civil War. But first, let's start with the latest two episodes of Shogun. So, Episode 7, A Stick in Time, directors Takashi Fukunaga. Has an IMDb rating of 8.4 out of 10. Really great. But basic summary, we have a flashback of Lord Tornaga winning his first battle when he was just a little boy. Some guy commits seppuku right in front of him. He chops his head off, which is pretty crazy. But basically, this whole episode goes into whether or not he's going to surrender to the regents. He goes to meet his brother, and it turns out his brother is like kind of shitty. And, like, basically, it's kind of, like, turned his back on his family, basically. And, but in secret, you kind of find that on the middle of the episode. And then the rest of the episode is kind of him coming to terms with, like, surrendering and eventually seeming like he's going to surrender. So, there's a brief summary. Some of the details, though, you know, there's a lot of, like, weighing of, like, Blackthorne is kind of weighing of what his role is. He wants to, like, get back on his ship and, like, you know, actually do something. I think he mentions even that, like, he's given all these, like, gifts and honors, and he has no idea what they're even for if he's, like, not really doing anything.
Let me in, coach, basically.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But, Matt, what stood out to you in this episode?
Okay, yeah, the first scene with that one guy that he wins the first battle, right, and the guy's committing seppuku, and then he asks him to be his second. Well, we come back to this later on, too, in, like, the next X episode after this, but, yeah, I don't know enough about, you know, the traditions of old-school Japan and all that stuff, so I always knew that they would do seppuku, right, they would kill themselves, but they have the option, I guess, for another guy to also finish the job, basically, and that's, like, a... Is that an honor, I guess?
I don't know Tornaga if it's an honor.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it must be an honor that you, or some kind of honor that you, a like, bestow on your, on someone to, because, like, it's, like, I don't know, I think it's just to, like, kill them quickly, right?
Yeah.
So they're maybe not, I mean, they literally have, like, their guts and shit hanging out of them,
yeah.
So.
That's already pretty bad, so.
Yeah.
Very, very intense opening. Very Game of Thrones-y sort of style. Yeah. This whole episode, really, actually. It's that one brother. Dude, I knew that motherfucker was up to me.
I know. He seems so cool,
yeah.
Too.
Are you kidding? Not. In the beginning? No.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Because he's introduced as, like, the half-brother. And already think, I'm thinking, yeah, that's not good. The half-sibling. No,
you think half-siblings just can't get along?
At least in fiction, that I've seen something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he's like, basically kind of traps Tornaga, right? He's like, oh, by the way, yeah, you have your place surrounded, yeah, we're gonna take you in and all that stuff. It's like, gosh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, oh yeah, here's the big highlight of the episode, though, is freaking his son, Nakakado, Tornaga's son, right? He goes to the warehouse later on looking for him. You forgot to mention that part, but it's all good.
Well, it's a big part.
Biggest takeaway of this episode, so... Yeah, he goes there, he just, you know, he just did his pillow stuff, and then he shows up one scene, Nakakata, right? And then he's like, this is not gonna work out, so you got to go, bro, uncle. And then, he kind of does, like, the Batman Begins thing, sacrificing his footing for a killing stroke, and he slips on the rock, and is donezo, yeah.
He bashes his own head in.
Another rock, yeah. So
brutal.
When that happens,
brutal.
Like, gosh, damn, yeah. So, Tornaga's got no son. The half-brother lives on to live and fight and plot again days. It's like, gosh, damn it. Yeah, ended pretty bad. So, yeah.
It feels like the seed of doubt. With all his, his whole army is like, oh, okay, so we're going to fight? And he's like, no. And then they're like, oh, are you sure about that? But yeah, that vibe definitely gets around, like, oh, he's like this big leader, And like, yeah, I get it. He was like, I don't want to sacrifice more people just for me, kind of thing. But at the same time, everyone's devoted their lives to him, and like, they're not ready to go out like that. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword there.
Well, he says, too, something like he doesn't want to, like, sacrifice all of Japan for, like, this one, for his one house, I guess.
Well, yeah, he's saying, like, if we fight, we're burning everything down, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, he does mention, okay, maybe, okay, that's maybe, like, skipping ahead a little bit, but I think somebody does mention that they would rather stay in Edo, have them come to Tornaga. But yeah, I guess Tornaga's kind of looking at it to be like, okay, I don't want to burn this whole city and kill everyone around me so that our plan maybe would work.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It's
interesting dichotomy, right? Because like, you begin the episode with him being a badass and then establishing his career as this great military leader. And then, like, even the previous episode, right, they were doing the chanting stuff. It's like, yeah, we're going to do the Crimson Sky thing. Oh, oh.
Yeah.
And then it's like, this episode, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to
go ahead and give up. Gosh,
yeah. Damn,
well, that's why Blackthorn is so pissed. He's like, you're giving me all these things. You asked me for my help.
Dude.
And now you don't want the help? It's like, you're all dead. He's like, all of you are dead. And you leave.
Yeah.
Right.
He says in Japanese,
He's learning his Japanese. Yeah, he's been there a little bit now, a few months, so he's about to pick up some stuff, so that's cool.
But yeah, just generally, I don't know. I like this episode a lot. I like the flashback. It was interesting at the end. I mean, of course, like, the sun dying is, like, a big thing. I thought another interesting thing is that, I think that was this episode that, like, the courtesan owner... Zekiku? I can't remember.
Yeah,
I think her. It looks like her place is going to be right next to where the church might be built.
Yes, I think
that
was
so funny.
Yeah.
Is it next episode? Oh, okay.
Maybe it's the next episode. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, this episode he gives it to her. Like, the
land, okay, gotcha. She's giving the land. Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. spoiler.
Spoiler, even though you're going to hear it in like literally like 3 seconds anyway.
I know.
But yeah, so all that stuff I really liked. I don't know, Ron, is there anything in this episode that like stood out to you?
Some of their just like their concepts of things, like the episode's called Stick of Time, and he literally burns one incense and that's the time that she has to like, claim, you know, whatever she wants to talk about or anything. So I didn't know about that. That's actually an interesting idea. Like,
yeah,
like a timer. Like, hey, you have till this is burnt to say whatever you want to me.
Yeah,
or ask you whatever you want.
Give me an hourglass. Yeah. Turn it over. Yep.
Basically, yeah. Right. But I really like those kinds of things. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know too much about that.
Yeah.
But again, like Matt, like I'm not super. Like,
yeah, I'm not
well read on like old Japanese, you know, ways, but. A lot of those things that are small details are really interesting to me. But yeah, the fact that he thinks Crimson Sky is going to be so bad it's going to destroy the entire country is pretty wild. So like, I'm interested to see, like, you know, if it ever does, you know, get to that point where they do it, like, how bad is this fight really going to be? Even though they're outnumbered.
Yeah, I'd like to know, like, how much are they outnumbered by, too? Because it's like, he mentions that his army is kind of devastated from the earthquake.
Yeah.
So they're missing a bunch of guys. Like,
they don't
have
that brother's army either, so...
Yeah, they don't have that one.
Yeah,
the guy actually mentions earlier, if the brother refuses this, they're like, they're done, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering who's going to come in.
Lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your friend on the Rebel Moon will not survive. Yeah.
Damn. They need to pull, like, a 300 and just, like... That's kind of what I thought they were going to do. Or, like, bring the entire army through, like, one small space. Because remember when his son opened fire on that group of guys with the cannons?
Yeah.
I thought when Tornado was like, oh, well, he actually did me a favor because now they have to come to us. I thought he was already playing, like, okay, I'll get my half-brother. We'll make them come to this one spot, and then we can just handle them as they come through this one spot. That's kind of what I thought they were going to do.
Yeah, you forward up.
But now the brother turned on, so I don't know if that's an option anymore.
They'd have to, it would make sense to hole up in the city, but now can they even do that because they have to like fight the half brother's army there too?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the pictures of some of the sets. The Half Brothers hat looks like a big dildo on his head, which I appreciate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What that's my main takeaway. Yeah, yeah,
foreshadowing.
But yeah, let's move on to the next episode. Let me bring that up. That episode's called The Abyss of Life. It's director Emmanuel Osei Kufour. This one has a 9.1 out of 10.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah. So basically, it turns out after his son has died, they have, and this is, I guess it speaks to like ancient Japanese culture that I also don't know.
Yes.
They have 49 days to mourn their son.
Okay, it was 49.
About the two, yeah. I thought it was like 4 to 9 days, like 4 days to up to 9 days. And then that's what I thought I heard.
Up to nine, yeah, yeah.
But 49 seems like a long time, so I don't know.
I mean, that's his son, so I don't know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but then for them not to... Basically, it's like a temporary truce. Like, we're not going to fuck with you for
like
14 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, poured up, so... I don't know.
So it's interesting, too, because it's like, in that case, so I guess, like, he was told that he had the next day to kind of decide to surrender, and then, like, they were going to leave.
Yeah.
After that. And now I'm guessing that they don't have to do that, or well, they could just hang out.
Buys him some time. Yeah. It was a necessary loss, I guess. So.
Yeah.
So.
What happens to it? Yeah. So.
I don't know, but Mariko tells Blackthorne that he's not, you know, his service is ended. He can go. He gives him back the journals that he got a bunch of shit for before. I think the Ishido guy that's been scheming against Lord Tornaga is like wants to marry that one girl who's also pissed at Lord Tornaga.
Okay.
So they said that. They want to make some sort of alliance with her, right?
Yes.
In the episode? And
they're
Tornaga's... Tornaga's like, why would she do that? And like, and I'm also thinking that because it seems like she hates him, right? So I don't know how would that work? But, okay. You guys, whatever. You banner on that. But anyway... They're also informed that Ishido wants Yubishige to return the guns and the cannons as well, which would leave him at a huge disadvantage later on. Well, not just disadvantage, they're surrendering anyway, I guess. But yeah, and then, you know, the Catholic father comes around. He's trying to make some sort of alliance. But yeah, like, Tornaga is pretty insistent on surrendering. He seems and the fucking Buntaro guy wants to go like kill John again. Blackthorn. He's got he's really got it out for him. I mean, I good for good reason, I guess, but
he's basically pretty suspicious that some funny business happened.
Suspicious, but Tornaga tells him that if he accuses Blackthorn of acting improperly with his wife and he wants to kill him, then he'd have to kill his wife also. And he refuses to do that.
Right.
And then she mentions again that she still wants to die. She wants Lord Nord Tornaga to kill her. And then he refuses to do that. So it's just a lot of people waiting for death. Theories. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's like, just kill me now. Kill me, please. So.
Come on, come kill me. What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Scene was so funny, though, that whole tea thing.
Yeah.
Because when Kara's like reminiscing with her, he's like, yeah, we had some good times, right?
Yeah.
And then, I'm making this tea. It's very special. Let's just sit here and bond for a moment. And then I think he wanted to kill her because he knew that he was going to die too. Like they would die together, right? Kind of like a suicide pact. And then she's like, no, you don't understand. I wanted to die so I'd get away from your sorry ass. Like, and then even cries and stuff, too. It's like,
I know. Damn.
Not good. Ugh. Man. Get him dirty.
That was a rough one.
Sorry.
Later on.
Yeah, continues through us, too.
Yeah, later on, John, he's walking around town, and he's shown where the rest of his... He finds where the rest of his men are, but he only finds... He sees one who's, like, trying to, like, feel up on some random girl. And then they kind of get into it. He beats the shit out of him. Blackthorn beats the shit out of this random guy. And then, or one of his men, not somebody.
Sorry, yes. Well, yeah.
Whatever, his crew member, yeah. One of his crew members.
Yeah, his crew member is like, hey, man, take off your clothes. Those clothes, take them off now, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can say, yeah. No, we haven't seen each other in a while. Yeah. I'm not like that, yeah.
They might.
But yeah, and then like he mentions...
Yeah, he's up it.
He mentions later to Lord Torinaga that he... Or not Torinaga. Yubushibe, sorry. That he doesn't feel like he belongs to Japan, but then when he looks at his own men, now he doesn't feel like he belongs with them either, which is interesting. He's kind of left in this no man's land, but and also everybody keeps refusing, like Blackthorn wants to fight and Yobushibi's like, no, we're not gonna do that, we're just gonna go with Torinaga's plan, because everybody's sure that Torinaga has some sort of, you know, like secret plan. He's only saying that he's gonna surrender. And this kind of all culminates in the end where he's asking them to, like, hey, like, I'm gonna surrender. I need people to, like, sign this thing who wants to surrender with me. And that's basically, like, signing your own death warrant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his kind of best friend that he, like, well, he didn't grow up with. He was a little kid. But that watched over him his whole life, basically.
Yeah, it's like Hiramatsu, I think.
Yeah. Hiramatsu's like, hey, this sucks and is, like, dumb, and, like, we should, like, fight them. And Torinaga's like, oh, I'm not going to do that. He's like, if we're going to do this, I'm just going to go ahead and commit seppuku right now. And they kind of stared each other down for so long. He's like, you're not going to do it. He's like, I am. And then he asks his own son, which is Buntou, to, like, chop off his head.
Second.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be his second. And it's a really intense scene. And it basically, I guess it wins the mind of everybody around them to, like, go and fight. But then at the end, they were saying, like, okay, so this is, like, Torinaga's plan then? To, like...
I can't tell if it was actually his plan or if he's just using what's been dealt to him.
They're saying the surrender has to look real, which means, like, he's purposely...
Pretending to be sick.
He might not be sick. Yeah, he's pretending to be sick, and he's trying to, I guess maybe he's trying to play the regents or something like that, to be like, oh no, I really am surrendering. In fact, all my people are, like, pissed at me for, like, surrendering, and, like, to, like, really make it look real, knowing that like his own dudes are, like, gonna go fight them.
Yeah. Maybe the old guy who did the seppuku, maybe he knew, like,
this might have been in on the plan. Yeah,
has to be done because, you know, who knows if there's some spy there or anything, you know?
Yeah,
and he knows word's going to get back to his enemies that, like, oh, his people turned against him, his best friend killed himself, like, he's done for. So they're not going to expect him to attack. Yeah,
yeah,
because he skipped his own son's funeral. And, you know, because he was quote unquote sick, so and they're so big with honor and stuff, like, you would never do something like that unless
why would he? Yeah.
Yeah. So at that very end scene, I was like, okay, so, you know, he's using his son's unfortunate death, you know, he has time now to figure something out, and now he's just putting on this show. So it seems like he's going in for the long con here.
Yeah, it's super interesting as to, I guess I don't understand the regent's plan exactly either, because, like, I don't understand why they don't just march over there and just kill him then, if that's, like, their plan. But
customs, you have to go certain steps, and they want it public about stuff.
To me, so,
like, yeah,
that's they want at least, yeah. So,
Ron, you mentioned that you like this episode more than the last one. Yeah. What about this episode was more appealing to you?
Torinaga's plan. It feels like the episode before, they showed how he won his first battle, and he's just astute to, like, just outsmarting people And now this feels like he's just trying to outsmart even his own people to try to get the upper hand on his enemies, because he knows where he's going to get back, because he also, that priest comes and he says, you know, you're not suited to, you know, speak my language, don't even talk to me. But then he's like, but I'm still going to keep my promise and give you, you know, your land.
You know, and then that reminds me too, that he mentions that, like, he always seems like a couple steps ahead of people, where he knows how Blackthorn and these other people are going to react to something. And he's like, they're probably already on the ship or like getting on their way over there. And you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, he knew that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels like nothing's by accident with Tornada. So the fact that, like his like long life friend did like kill himself kind of felt like it had to have happened. And maybe he's old enough to know, like, if I don't do this, like, it's not going to be believable and we'll be exposed as like faking.
I think so. Yeah.
But, but
Tornada ran the numbers the 6 million times and he saw this is the only way for it to work. All of that happened.
There was a part too where he was like, oh, why didn't you speak up at that one part where he's like I chopped that dude's head off in one slice. He's like, that wasn't one slice. That took me like 9 slashes or something like that. I was like, that is nuts. But
he's really hacking away.
He's really, he's like, why would you pick a kid to like do that? Matt, what were your favorite parts of this episode?
Dude, the ending is kind of cool, because, like, Tornaga, we talked about how Tornaga seems to guess how things are going to play out, and seems to be, like, moving things into place, right? So, even Mariko has some sort of role in here, and he's like, I need you to go on the ship, and, do your part now. Now's the time. And I'm like, oh, shit, let's go. And
then, I'm wondering what her part's going to be,
Like, what is she going to do? What does he expect her to do? So the anticipation, it's so good, and I'm looking forward to watching the series again when it's all said and done, and to see how calculated things really were. I imagine like they'll do maybe some sort of reveals or flashbacks as to how Tornaga manipulated things into place. So it's like maybe he knew Nakakato would go to meet the half brother, right? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, And even, like, the friend who killed himself is like, I wonder if they had any sort of private conversation. I don't know if that was set up, or it's just, like, he just knows that his friend was going to do that. And he knows that that's the only way for this whole plan to work. I don't know. But it would be really cool to see how this all unfolded from the very beginning. I'm really looking forward to stuff like this. Kind of like watching, like, heist sort of movies or... You know, anything with like a twist.
Where everything comes together.
Like that, right? I love rewatching stuff like that. Very rewarding. And it's like way better by the time you finally see how things move. So, really impressed with the episode.
All right. Seems like there's 2 more episodes left in the season.
Let's go, baby.
So, the next one is the Crimson Sky. And then the next one is Dream of Dreams.
Oh, is that what it's called? Oh, shit.
The next one is called Crimson Sky,
After all that, there is no battle. He really does just turn insult there. Gosh, damn it.
The next episode is just called Surrender, okay, do we think his brother is going to live through this?
I hope
not. The one that betrayed him?
Yes.
No, fuck that guy.
I don't think so. Especially if
he did make me laugh a couple times, so I don't know.
You
mentioned that he shit on a horse, and that made me laugh.
I laughed at it later that night.
Running my journal.
I like how that scene when he tells it and nobody laughs in the room.
Yeah, I know.
It made it that much funny.
Of course, no disrespect.
That was a great scene.
The humor in this moment, so it's really good. This is the beach scene, right? Where it's like, we're gonna put the church here. Then wait, who are they over there? Oh, they're just another local business or something.
Yeah, the
brothel right next to
I
mean,
All
right,
a lot of good humor in this one.
Let's move on to season two of Invincible. We haven't kept up with every episode on this podcast, but we have watched the whole thing. Even though there was a huge break in between, I think it was this season, it was like 8 episodes long, I think.
Let me just make sure.
But in the middle of this season, there was about a couple months, I think. Yeah, it was only 8 episodes for season two of Invincible. And yeah, there's a lot of death. There's a lot of kind of dimension traveling, time travel even. Yeah. And yeah. So I don't want to go through a whole beat by beat of every episode, but just a general kind of vibe or like general summary is that the big parts, at least for me, is that we see Omni-Man again. He has a whole new family on a different planet. Mark has a brother. I forgot what's the name of this alien race. I forgot what they're called.
I forget too.
Yeah, but anyway, they age really rapidly. But you also see the other Viltrumites come back, and Mark is like getting a little stronger. He's more power. He's learning more. Obviously,
powers have doubled. Yeah,
his powers is doubling. And you are kind of anticipating. It's funny because the Viltrumites keep sending like one or two guys to go like beat some ass. Yeah. And I'm wondering why they don't just, I mean, it seems like Omni-Man by himself was supposed to do it. So I'm wondering why these one or two guys can't just take the planet, unless it's like they're just really afraid of like Mark. Well,
they don't want to do it by force. So I think that was a whole concept. Yeah, there.
Sure.
That's why they need Omni-Man to bridge it. Or then even Mark to make it a peaceful transition.
Well, weaken, yeah. I think they still like weaken it a little bit.
Because they know they could just take over.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the point, you know.
Oh. So. But, all right. But, but we also see a new kind of super villain, kind of a nemesis for Mark, even though he doesn't know who he is for like most of the season.
Or even know who you are, yeah.
It's this scientist who he's trying to like solve this. He's trying to basically save every dimension, every universe. And what's his name? It's like
Angstrom.
Angstrom. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Angstrom. He gets mutated in the process of this machine that he built because of Invincible and all these like villains start coming out of nowhere, start fighting, wrecking a bunch of the machines. And he gets all mutated, whatever, gets the collective consciousness of like every single version of him in every dimension. So he can see Omni-Man and Mark destroying everything in like most dimensions. So he harbors this huge resentment against Mark, and that kind of plays out through the season too, which I think is really interesting. I guess that's this sort of like Lex Luthor type guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, and all that kind of culminates at the end too. So before I go into more details, let me start with Matt on this one.
Okay, yeah, sure, man.
Are there any particular episodes or any huge surprises, shocks that came in this season for you that you were not expecting? Maybe you weren't. You know, I figured Omni-Man would come back at some point, but
he came back a lot sooner than I thought, actually.
Me too.
And the fact that he has a family. Yeah, so I'm trying to guess the timeline here. I guess it's been a few months since Mark saw him, or has it been a year or something like that?
I think it's been,
Yeah, because like,
the flashback, like 6 months, something like that.
Yeah, Omni-Man's there, and then he helps them, and they eventually elect him as like a king or some sort of, you know, the ruler of the people there. Gosh, I really really want to remember what they're called, but yeah, that stuff was really cool. And yeah, he's got his half brother. That's when the other Viltrumites come by, and I thought that was a really good episode. I guess that was like the episode 4, right before the break, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because he had like the 2v2.
Really
good, yeah.
Yeah, Thraxton, Mark's pissed, that's what they are. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Thraxton. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, well, that, I mean, of course, yeah, episode
was really
4.
Good one.
Really cool fights, and like again, like Omni-Man is like freaking brutal and awesome. not like as a dude, but just cool at fighting.
Yeah, no, I don't condone a Vinny Mizek. Yeah.
I do not condone it, but it was cool.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else was cool about the season was I can't remember that one guy's name. He's basically like the Coulson to
yes. Owen he finds Goggins out he's character. Like yeah.
He's like, oh my god, I died before I think, and then like later on, he's like,
he's
oh yeah,
like
I'm going to show you this stuff
ton
here
of times. Yeah,
he died a million times. Yeah, God. So he's really he's more machine now than man.
Yeah,
not really twisting evil though. He's still basically the same, so that's good.
Okay.
But it was very like RoboCop like, or like you know. Anytime somebody finds out there's some sort of machine or something, all that stuff's really interesting.
Donald Ferguson, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Donald.
And then,
yeah.
The Adam Eve stuff, that part was interesting too towards the end of the season with that time travel thing, right? So
yes.
It's like Mark's fighting Angstrom, right? And he gets thrown into some sort of portal, and I guess he ends up in some wasteland, I guess. And then he's stuck there. Or at least in the original timeline, he would have been stuck there. And then, like, Eve and a few of the other Guardians show up. It's like, oh my god, we've been looking for you. And we're going to get you out of here and all that stuff. And also, Mark, yeah, I have feelings for you. Even at the time, even 20 years ago, I was like, whoa, what?
Wow.
Like, that wasn't really apparent. At least in the first season, I was kind of shipping them. Like, Eve was like his first contact, right?
Yeah.
Mark and like the superhero world, aside from his dad, and then he like he finds the other girl, gosh, what's her name? His actual girlfriend.
Oh, I'll find her. Yeah,
Amber.
Amber. That sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Then they got together and I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then this is thrown in here, so I'm curious to see how that's gonna shape things for Mark and all that going forward. And I didn't think Eve had a very big role in the season up until that very end.
She had, she had like a
battle
pretty,
he's been chilling.
Would be like existential or something. Like she doesn't really know like what to do with her powers. She tries to help some people and then like the home that she built just like collapses because it was like not structured. Like it was
her dad hates her.
Yeah,
which is pretty wild.
The Adam Eve special, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That...
The one off episode. Yeah. Prior to season two. So, yeah. There's a lot of different places this show can go, I guess. So.
Yeah. I think, a lot of the personal relationships are pretty interesting. I mean, Amber and Mark's relationship are like basically like falling apart because they can't do the whole going to college and also like being a superhero or whatever thing.
She almost gets killed very easily.
Yeah.
By that one.
I think the robot guy and the Beast Girl. No. Well, I don't think. Is her name Beast Girl? It can't be it, but.
I think her actual name is Cassie, I think. At least non super name.
Monster
I'm not
Girl.
Sure
we're going
to check this.
Monster
Girl.
Yeah, they have their own thing, and then I think that's kind of unresolved, too, right? They don't really know how to fix it yet from her getting younger.
Reach out, she's her powers,
But, yeah. Ron, what about this season did you like, or what surprised you from this?
The multiverse stuff surprised me. I didn't think they were going to get into something like that so early in their show.
Yeah.
That's right, from the first episode.
Well, a couple episodes. Yeah, the last episode, too, was really cool. I guess the way they were...
Oh, yeah, that was fun, yeah.
How they fight.
The knockoff Spider-Man guy.
Yeah, the knockoff Spider-Man.
Batman.
Batman reference,
But yeah, that's cool. I think that was surprising. Omni-Man coming back was not surprising. I was interested with the ex-Viltrumite, who's, like, pretending to not be a Viltrumite, but he's trying to work with the guy who's the alien that Seth Rogen voices.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, the fact that...
Alan Seth Rogen's guy.
Yeah.
The other guy, I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Viltrumite, I don't know.
It's Peter Cullen does his voice, but I can't remember his character's name.
Yeah.
But, and then he reveals, like, oh, I am a Viltrumite. Which also, is that reveal of him being a Viltrumite, do all Viltrumites just have mustaches?
I
remember
think
he gets his beard off. He gets his beard off. He's like, you're a Viltrumite? I was like, oh, is that
Is that the thing?
I gotta think back to those two that attacked him. Yeah, one of them was a dude, right? So did he have a mustache too?
He did. Yeah,
that one blood planet. Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. I think it literally is like Viltrumite culture to like have a mustache.
And mustache. Yeah.
That's the fucking Shogun with a ponytail. You gotta have
him. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Gotta have mustache. Yeah. But I think that stuff's really interesting because like, are they gonna have to get Mark involved with them too? And I mean, even though he's old, does he still has to have strength like Viltrumite strength, right? Maybe not as strong as the other ones, but he still has to be pretty damn powerful.
I assume he does. I don't think. I mean, they say even as they age, they age slower as it keeps going.
Yeah. So if he's that old, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah. He's got like
maintain his strength
forever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did really like the season as a whole, just like Mark trying not to be Omni-Man is interesting to watch. He's really trying like any means necessary to not be his dad after what his dad did. Yeah.
I guess they have that. He says it early on where he says it to the head of the guy, like the head of the whatever this whole thing is.
Oh, yeah.
That dude, he's like, I'm not going to be my dad. And he like pounds the table or whatever. And then by the end of the season, it kind of culminates with him killing Angstrom, maybe accidentally, but it kind of mirrors the ending of the last season, season one, of him being beaten. How does he deal with that and stuff? Like,
yeah.
I guess he has a taste for blood.
God, yeah. He didn't want to be like his dad, and he ended up like his dad.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah. Well, a little bit, I think.
More to destroy.
Omni-Man did stop. He didn't kill Mark, but Mark definitely killed that guy.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Damn.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to react to that. And also knowing that he's turned in so many other universes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, that's not me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts off. I forgot the opening of the season starts off with an alternate dimension where Mark and Omni-Man have worked together and are tearing through everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the villain, I like his internal turmoil towards the end where he's like, wait a minute, I do remember it was my fault. Like I turned off the machine that blew up and like made me what I am now. So that was cool. I wasn't expecting him to have like any arc whatsoever in one season.
I guess that's true. Like there's a bunch of characters in this season who are all dealing with some sort of PTSD.
Yeah.
I think the mom gets shit early in the season.
When
that one dude finds out that her husband was on the end.
Yeah. Tells him not to come back. That was brutal.
You know, Donald has PTSD from like realizing he's died at least 30 something times, right? I think he said.
Yeah, I think he said 39, something like that.
Yeah. All the stuff with Omni-Man dealing with what he did to the planet or what he did to Earth. And I don't know. Well, and then also, I guess that's interesting from what I kind of like, ended up liking more this season was the Immortal, I think, Duplicate.
Oh,
I actually like that character a little more this season. That was interesting to he is like immortal, so he lives through all this stuff. He knows that he's going to outlive everybody else.
Yeah.
And yeah, what a fucking lonely existence.
Yep.
But I mean, that's what Omni-Man was trying to prep Mark for. It's pointless to love anything because everything's gonna die and you're just gonna be alone.
Damn.
I was like, fuck. when he was holding him, you know, when that train was going through, he was holding him there. But that was pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, Immortal, like, I guess really fell in love with the duplicate girl.
Duplicate.
And for some reason that one, like, I guess really hit because like he even asked like the guy who's in charge of like the secret government branch, whatever. He's like, why is this one different? Like, why is this one hurt so much? You know, I've I watched people die so many times. So it was enough for him to walk away and like stop being a hero. So that was pretty crazy.
Exactly.
What, like Alaska or wherever the hell he went?
I assume it's like somewhere. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, else.
Yeah. It's interesting to see like what's going to happen with certain characters, because he could be gone for a while and then come back later to help, you know, Mark, or I don't know if he would ever join Omni-Man, but it looks like Omni-Man and Mark are going to join forces to fight the Viltrumites, because like,
yeah,
they're obviously the big bad in the universe. So
well, I guess too, well, and the season ends with Omni-Man saying, "I miss my wife." My wife.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
My wife.
I may have overreacted.
I don't. Overreacted. Yeah, I was like, I'm wondering, how are you going to smooth that over? Yeah.
There's no way. Even if he comes back and helps Mark save the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows, the planet knows what he did, right?
Yeah. They all
okay,
know.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. So, because yeah, they all, like, I mean, because they were still rebuilding, I think, Chicago, right?
Yeah, that's where the fight happened. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so there's no way people are going to take him back. It doesn't
matter.
It's
kind of like if Star Wars Return of the Jedi ended with Vader going back with Luke, he doesn't succumb to the wounds or anything, right? You can't just have Darth Vader like, walking around. There's no fucking way. Yeah.
Everything's cool now. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way. After how many people he just murdered, like, very easily too, without any like thought. It's like there's no way he can just be walking around. Everyone's like, "Oh, hey, Vader."
Doesn't feel any pity or pain or remorse. Fucking Omni Man.
So even if he does come back and he tries to right his wrongs, I just don't see it changing the planet's mind.
Or public opinion.
After what he did.
There's no way. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he killed the rest of the Justice League, basically. Like, there's no way
he'd have to explain. Well, no, how are you going to explain that? Really, you're just going to be like, well,
there's no going back for what he did.
Hey, so. You know what? Shit happens sometimes, right?
Plead insanity, something.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah.
All right, let me start with Matt on this. Okay, comparing this season to season one, better, worse? What do you think?
It is worse. I still like it.
Damn. But,
Season one was so streamlined, though. It was very straightforward. You got this kid learning about his powers, coping with high school, learning about his dad, becoming like the biggest villain there is, and he fights him and all that stuff, and he has to man up to all that. Like, it just seemed like everything was just plotted out better, I guess. Mm. Not as many branches. Yeah, because, like, I don't know where Alan's character fits in all this. Alan Alien, Seth Rogen's character.
It looks like he got buff somehow, and then like
every time he gets beat, he comes back stronger.
Mm.
Or what that old Viltrumite guy created him, as far as he said every time he would die. Or get very close to death. That's why he unplugged his like life support.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
So he's like, he needs to get stronger to fight these Viltrumites. So
now it looks like he can pretty easily beat him up. I mean, who was that girl? Anissa? I think that was the Viltrumite.
I can't remember. The one looks like Supergirl from the Flash movie.
Yeah.
I was thinking that too. You're right.
Yeah, they look like pretty damn close.
You're right, yeah.
But yeah, he's able to beat her back, like, or at least, like, have some blood pop out, so.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's very difficult to make happen.
Yeah.
No, she was very strong, yeah. And like, even Walton Goggins' character is like, "Mark, you cannot take her, just say the words that you will do what she says."
Yeah.
Like, gosh, I could do this all day, pretty much, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Why, dude, yeah.
But why? Yeah, that's what's interesting about that fight, right? It's like he gets his ass kicked, he gets humbled. So by the time he goes to Angstrom, he's like, he knows he could take him, and he's like letting out that frustration, right? That's how he goes too far. That frustration from his previous fight and all that stuff. So
yeah,
and then like Rex is a funny character. that one guy who kind of looks like the Flash, right? He's got his red suit, and then he gets shot in the head, and then somehow he returns to. So there were too many of those.
Yeah, that episode was brutal too. I was like, the lizard people really are like the ones killing everybody.
If too many characters come back, though, you kind of like lose some stakes there, and the meaning of death and all that stuff. There's no finality
to him, right?
Rex, the one that
came back.
It was Rex. It was Duplicate. It was Alan.
Duplicate was the fucking switcheroo. Like, I guess she never.
What was that? Well, I understand that, right? Did she say she's never been in the battlefield? Like, she's always sent her duplicates.
It's what it sounded like. Yeah.
I don't know. She's always kept her house. Well, I assumed it just like she always has one lying around, far away from everything. Yeah, exactly. Just in case.
I wonder if she was the actual one that just always stayed behind and just sent her duplicates out to fight.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
So it's like, has Immortal ever met the OG Prime duplicate?
I assume they're all duplicate, though, no?
Or was that the first time, like, in that cabin, like, he actually met her?
That's what I was thinking, too.
Maybe I don't understand, because, like, I thought they all were kind of the real thing. They're just, like, some hive mind, maybe, no?
No, I think there's one that just makes the duplicates.
Okay.
And they can be murdered, and she just makes more, basically.
All right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's my understanding of her power. So maybe this one that actually met Immortal, like, that's the actual one. Because I always, like, stayed away or something like that. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the Dr. Manhattan power. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
So I'm assuming it's that. But actually, you're right, Matt, because that filter might fight. Where that guy was like holding his intestines and came back and drop kicked the man in the back.
Yeah.
I was like, how the fuck did he survive that?
Boromir energy. Yeah.
That was the biggest shock to me actually in the whole season. When that guy came out, I was like, no fucking way. I stand with Omni-Man on this one. How the fuck did he survive?
I was pretty blown away. I thought they were really going to kill Omni-Man right there first. And I was like, what? But
it looked pretty damn close. Because what happens if Omni-Man gets killed by the Viltrumites? Would that push Mark to be like, go all in and be like, pull back? So, like,
I don't know.
Because I don't know how Mark feels towards his dad. Like, he kind of was just like, he heard him out, he fought with him.
Feeling better.
I think he's a little more forgiving. Yeah, because when they took his dad, he was upset about that.
Yeah, that's true. Because I was about to say, if they did kill him, like, what would his reaction be?
I don't know.
That's still his dad at the end of the day.
Yeah. So maybe that's...
I don't know.
Yeah.
By the time the third season rolls around... Do you think his brother is going to be like, we'll be like 40 years old. But will Mark's brother also be like 40 years old? Because he like ages really quickly.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
It's going to have to be some like ragtag group. It's going to be like Omni-Man, Mark, Alan, the Optimus Prime Viltrumite guy.
Yeah.
And then like his younger brother. That's five people.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong.
I don't know. Yeah, five people who couldn't stand against a Viltrumite. Like, I don't even know how big is the Viltrumite race right now. I have no clue.
That's true. I have no idea.
Or is it military that we're worried about? Like, do the Viltrumites just live? And then, like, our leaders are taking care of that. So if the leaders lose, it's like, okay, well, I guess Omni-Man's in charge now. Like, do they not care? Or is every citizen, like, ready to fucking fight kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if next season we kind of learn a little more about the Viltrumites, because, like, all we really know is that they kind of...
Right?
Well, all we really know is that they kick a lot of ass, and that, like, one of them... Like... I mean, especially after the first season, it's like, okay, that's just Omni-Man. That's just one guy. And this season too, yeah. where like Mark was fighting some of them, it was just like, well, how do you possibly, like, how would you be able to like beat them at all then? If it's just like one dude could do all that, then it's just like, well, you're fucked, man. Yeah, but
yeah, it does seem like Omni-Man though is like the cream of the crop in the in the race, because like it seems like all the other Viltrumites like speak highly of him.
Yeah,
so it looks like he was like a big time leader in the Viltrumites. So for him to turn his back on him, it's pretty crazy. Probably for them too.
Yeah,
he's their Homelander or Master Chief. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, not everybody's going to be like him. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, all right. We got to move on to Civil War here. But let's, for Civil War, I want to do two parts. So, like, let's do a non-spoiler review of Civil War first. And
okay.
Just so people, you know, get a feel. Okay, Matt, do you want to start off with just like, what are some, I know you don't, okay, since this is like a non-spoiler part, okay.
All right.
Maybe just give an idea of like what people could expect from this movie. If they haven't seen this movie, would they want to go see it, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That interesting way to tackle this, yeah. Okay, I would say like if you're already an Alex Garland sort of fan, the director of Ex Machina and Annihilation. I didn't really like Annihilation a whole lot, but Alex Garland, what he's done to in his career is like he's also written a lot of really cool stuff. He wrote Dread, he wrote 28 Days Later, I think. He's a really good writer and an interesting filmmaker overall. His concepts are a little bit out there. And I think this is actually one of the more streamlined sort of movies that he's made. It's not so, you know, heady with high concept sort of sci-fi sort of stuff.
No,
I don't know if that, and I don't know if that would disturb some people going into this. Maybe they would expect something like that. Maybe they would want answers. Yeah,
like for this film too. Yeah, I would say too, like, not spoiling anything at all, but like it doesn't. If you're thinking the politics or anything like that is going to be like outward or like pretty blatant, it's really not. It's pretty ambiguous as to like which side, you know. I'll say for this movie, I won't give anything away that's not in the trailer. It follows like these journalists who are recording this war that's going on in the United States, and the factions are interesting in that you don't really know a whole lot about them, and that might kind of be the theme of this whole movie. Like, there's some parts in there.
It's by design.
So, it's interesting. Like, it's kind of political, but not. But yeah, it's... But generally, though, like, for me, it's like the tension is really high all the time. Even though they're journalists, this is not, like, a slow movie. It's pretty action-packed in some... Especially in some parts. And, you know, I saw it with, like, this, like, Dolby, whatever they had in the theater, like whatever the Joe speaker,
dude. Yeah, Dolby, dude.
It was
Dolby's
so
awesome.
Loud. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, whoa,
yeah, dude. Yeah, a lot of jump scares as far as like
exactly, yeah,
and explosion.
Every gunshot, every explosion was like, wow. Ron, do you have any non-spoiler thoughts on this?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'll just say in generally, if you haven't seen this movie, I would. Yes, recommend you go see this movie.
But
Matt,
again,
what do you think?
It's a certain niche audience, so that's the thing. I don't think it's for everybody. Yeah, it's pretty violent. Again, if you're looking for answers as to how the politics play into all this, you're not really going to
get that. Yeah.
It's very open-ended, so that might turn off a lot of people. Yeah, it's kind of like a bittersweet sort of ending, especially. Yeah, I'm trying to avoid the spoilers. I don't know if it's like a really fist-pumping sort of ending either. Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. So it might leave some viewers dissatisfied.
Yeah.
I just know that I do like the characters, and I like the plot. I think it moves at a fantastic pace. There are action scenes. I never really thought of it as like a super action-oriented movie.
No, yeah.
But then it does finish like that. There's a battle at the end. So,
yes,
you know,
there are a couple of battles here that are pretty witnessing up close. So, and for, this, I guess what's different about this too, it's like an A24 film. So it's like,
I forgot to mention that. Yeah. If you're an A24 person, you're probably
So I'm like, I am. So I'm in. Yeah. But
there you go.
But it is, it does seem like they got like a bigger budget for this and than they usually do. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I think if if you like A24 films, you'll still get that in this. But generally, I would recommend go and watch it. If you have kids, don't bring them. If you don't like violence, don't go watch this. But anyway, okay. Now we're going to move on to spoiler room or spoiler part. Y'all, if you are listening to this and you don't want to hear this, just skip to the end. Okay. All right. But okay. Synopsis. Matt, do you think you can just give us like a brief?
I think I can.
All right. Yeah. Good.
Okay, man. I really like the movie, so I was really paying attention. Okay.
Nice.
So it starts off with they're in New York City, I think, and then what's her name? Gosh, Mary Jane Watson. Why can't I remember her actual name?
Kirsten Dunst.
Her character, she's like covering some rally or something like that. She runs into a young girl who's trying to be a photographer or journalist person too, but she doesn't have like any of the credentials. She doesn't have like any sort of like safety vest or anything. And then she sees that there's like a suicide bomber, so she basically gets her out of the way and saves her life. And huge explosion, right? Like 20 people died. And then, so already off the bat, it's like, gosh, this is going to be one of those sort of movies. And then, they're taking their photos and they're documenting the war effort and all that. They do some flashbacks. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you get a few background things of... The president is talking, which is Nick Offerman, which you don't get to see him a whole lot, but I thought he did a pretty good job.
Oh, that's right. He does have his opening speech. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He kind of has opening speech. He's like bragging how they've beaten he's claimed, huge. They had some sort of huge victory against the Western,
Western Front. WF.
Or Western Forces or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But and also like there might be I think there's like at least three factions because there's the regular United States government, there's the Western Forces, and I think the Florida Alliance
or has their own looking up again to Florida. Well, that's what's funny about it, right? It's like they mentioned like right off the bat, we're beating back the Western Forces of California and Texas. So I'm thinking, holy crap, when would California and Texas ever be on the same side of anything?
He'd have to really screw up.
He's a really bad president or some sort of tyrant or something like that. They mentioned now he's in his third term. So,
Well, I'm trying to think of like the logistics of this too. I was like, okay, if any two states, those are the two largest populations. So that makes sense, I think, in order to push back the rest of the country. And especially if Florida is doing their own thing too. I don't know. But anyway, so... You go ahead. She just met Jesse and they're
I'm trying to get their names again. Yeah, Kirsten Dunst is Lee Smith. Okay. But yeah, they show some flashbacks of how Lee Smith usually covers, you know, war efforts and hostage situations stuff. It's really interesting. Like she's like right there in the action, right? And then like dudes are getting executed like right in front of her.
Oh yeah.
And then she has to take the photo and it's like she's kind of like numb to all of this, I guess. He's been doing this long enough, right?
So he mentions later in the movie too, like when those two guys are hanging up, she's like, "Well, he's probably going to kill them anyway, so you kind of just have to like not like
think
about it too much." Yeah,
get invested. Yeah, well, yeah. So she and her partner Joel, I think. The cameraman,
he's like the reporter or something.
The reporter, she has a camera, right? But yeah, they're in the lobby of some hotel, and that's when they meet up with the older gentleman here, Stammy. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys ever watch the show Devs? I don't know if we ever talked about Devs. Oh, he's also the guy from the first Dune movie.
Yeah, I know. He's the main guy.
Talk about? That's right, yeah. He's been in a few things. By the way, Devs is also an Alex Garland TV show. It's a very good show.
With Nick Offerman, right?
He's also in that. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has his long hair in that show. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. This is on FX. Yeah.
I know. It's been a few years now.
But yeah, I really like that show.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and also there's another character in that show who's also in this movie too. That one Asian girl at the very end, one of the other fellow reporters and all that.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. So they're meeting up with Sammy, the Dune guy, and then they're talking about how they're gonna travel across the states to go to. Well, they want to go to the White House, right? To try to cover the or try to find the president first, mm-hmm. to do some sort of interview, even though this is nearly impossible. That place is forwarded up. And they're not going to be able to actually get access to that. But they're going to try anyway, as they know that the Western forces are also on their way there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to try to beat them there to at least to talk to the president before shit, you know, goes down. But they kind of don't tell him right away, right? Because they're saying, like, they're talking about Charlottesville. And I guess Charlottesville is where there is, like, a camp there or more of the Western forces.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they do end up there. So they're being real coy about their plans and all that stuff. And I guess Sammy wants to hitch a ride to at least Charlottesville. He's also a reporter, but like...
He doesn't want to go to Times, D.C., but he works... Yeah, he works for a rival, whatever, publication.
Something like that, yeah. And then the young journalist, Jessie, is also there. She finagles her way into the building, and she's like... She talks with Lee, telling her, oh, you're my hero growing up and all that stuff. Want to be just like you. And she's like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm just going to go to my room now and piss off. All right, bye. And then the very next day, she's like in the van with Sammy and with Joel. And she sees the girl. He's like, what the shit? Yeah. And she basically talked to Joel and Sammy after talking to Lee. And then it's her way on to the van to basically go with them on the road trip. So I kind of like how it's also like a road trip movie, kind of. So
a little bit.
I wasn't expecting that. Yeah,
I would say
I like road trip movies in general. Yeah.
As far as like the, I guess what they call it, like cinematography for this is like there's a part in the when Kirsten Dunst is like going through like a flashback or whatever, and she's remembering I guess other little other war, what trips or photography, I don't know, like experiences that she's had.
Yeah.
There's a scene where some guy is getting. Like lit on fire, like right in front of her.
Oh,
yeah. And I was like, this looks nuts. Film. It was
very real looking. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so real looking and kind of like haunting, but I mean, really well shot though. and yeah, like, and there's a bunch of scenes like that too, where it's like really kind of gnarly. I mean, there's a scene later on where Jesse Plemons. They meet up with him, and it's really tension-filled, but there's a scene in there where the rookie reporter kind of, like, falls into the mass grave, and it's kind of, like, crazy, like, the
Battle
way it slows down a little bit, and, yeah, I was like, oh, man, this is, like, gross, but, yeah.
Excellent stacks on the body, crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Ron, what did you think of this movie?
I didn't like it as much as you guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm one of those people that was really irritated and it was too ambiguous. I didn't know half the movie whose military was whose for a while.
I guess that's
literally,
we don't know actually for a lot of them,
really
I think.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was only at the end where I realized the people pushing the White House was the Western Front.
Yeah.
Or Western Forces.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, like the guy from Breaking Bad just seemed like some random dude.
Yeah, I don't know what society. I think that was probably a theme of this movie, though, too. So it's so I don't know. Because it's like there's one scene where they're going, they run into a bunch of Christmas stuff and some sniper starts taking shots at them. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know who he was for. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the dudes with him are just like, he asked him a bunch of questions like, oh, which side are you on? And, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this dude's trying to kill me and we're trying to kill them. And then that's
him.
Yeah. So I guess like that's what this whole movie is. But it is a little more, if you're not into that, though, then it's like,
I wasn't sure. Like, I was actually surprised this movie was through the lenses of the press, the
journalists. Yeah,
I didn't know that going in.
I
kind of felt like it was gonna be
Like, I get a lot of Walking Dead vibes from this because they're, it feels like they're out in the South and like the wilderness traveling and stuff. So I thought it was going to be just like a group of people going through the Civil War. But the only time it felt like an actual Civil War was at the beginning when they were recording those first guys having like a fight. It was like clearly military guys upstairs shooting down on like civilian dressed people with guns. I got that vibe there. And then obviously when the Western forces were pushing like the White House.
I was wondering, I was wondering if the guys with just like normal clothes, if those were Western forces or not. I guess it's just a thing of like, well, I just won't know. But
so they could have done a better job of identifying, I guess.
Maybe. I guess there's a little bit of like, if you're like the world that's being built out is really ambiguous. I have no idea who, because maybe those could have been like Florida people too, and like I don't know, because they mentioned they were coming up on I think in the beginning of the movie. I think they said the Florida Alliance was coming up to like North Carolina or something like that, or getting closer,
something like that. Yeah, I remember mentioning it in the hotel.
Yeah, and I think they were basically like just like, it's kind of like World War II, where they were both like the Allies and like the Soviet Union were both like coming up on Berlin. Yeah. I assume that was like kind of the situation here with like DC, but
yeah.
But yeah, I guess, yeah, it's really ambiguous. And I think that was probably done on purpose to not be like, hey, this politics is good and this politics is bad, like for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah.
I can see that bothering people. Yeah, if you just want to clear cut, these are the bad guys.
It didn't have to be clear cut. I just wanted to know at least like who was against each other. Like it was very ambiguous. Like, and I get it because like they're the press, and I was actually also really surprised. Like nobody usually fucked with them. Until the guy from Breaking Bad didn't give a fuck and kill people.
They mentioned earlier that the president's, like the American faction or whatever, treats the press as like enemy combatants. And he said, if you go there, they'll kill you. Like, so I assume that the Jesse Plemons guy was like part of them, but I don't know though. And maybe he was just like, he wasn't happy because like they just caught like his mass grave or something, but
I don't know. It definitely felt like a governor from like The Walking Dead kind of thing.
Yeah.
This dude is just on his own fucking killing people.
Yeah.
And he's got the pit to prove it.
But, well, that part was great though. Like, really good. Yeah, exactly, dude.
Yeah.
Not knowing who he is.
Yeah, and like, yeah, it definitely scared the shit out of me because like my theater was loud too. He's like, "Oh, is this your colleague?"
He's like, yeah, he's like, "Oh, ah!" Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, shit."
Yeah,
but I did like that was like probably the most tense part of that movie was like that.
Yeah,
that absolutely.
Because you're like, oh, like this, he just killed this guy. He's definitely willing to kill all these people. Like, I don't know how they're actually gonna get out of that.
His buddy was losing his shit. He's asking, "Where are you guys from?" and all that stuff. So it's like you got to think about what to say.
You're trying to figure out what does he want to hear?
I was thinking, like, is anybody going to lie about anything? It's like, we already know where they're from. You know, they've established that.
Yeah.
For the most part, at least his character.
I think.
And,
Jesse mentions Missouri. She's from Missouri, and Kirsten Dunst is Colorado, and he says, Missouri, Colorado, those are, like, real America.
Yeah,
whatever.
That's American.
Yeah.
So that's part of the loyalist states, maybe? Let me see here.
I think, because, like, I think
possibly,
Joel said...
Oh,
he was
I see
Florida.
We saw Wikipedia. Yeah.
Joel said he was from Florida, and he seemed a little more agitated at him.
But he didn't kill him right away, which is interesting. So Florida's like, it's okay, I guess. Not great. But then that one guy's like, Hong Kong? Oh, so China then. Oh,
yeah. But it's like, why though? Like, I don't understand.
You should have known better.
That had nothing to do with, like,
she got lied.
I would have just went with, what did they say earlier? Missouri? Yeah, I'm
yeah,
from
Missouri.
There.
That's me too. Yeah, here. Love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, for me, the movie was good. Yeah. I don't want to say the movie's bad. But I think I was expecting something different.
And I was just really surprised we were just following, like, the press, like, that group of people. And they were just, like, taking pictures. I did like, all the acting was great. The cinematography was great. I did like how, like, you'd be watching a scene, and then it was, like, freeze frames. It shows the picture that they snapped. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Good shots. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, it just wasn't exactly what I was expecting. It was...
Lily went to go see this movie with me, and she was angry at the... She was mad at the Jesse character the entire movie.
Yeah, she was she was pretty irritating. Like, just constantly getting them into shit.
He was always
and then when
the
she
way.
Jumped the car, and when they had to get the guy, you know, from Breaking Bad in general, like, they should never even been in that situation, but they were fucking dumb. And like,
that's what I don't understand. It's like, you're in a war, dude. Just stick in your little thing together. And then,
in your lane. I mean, some people, some people just don't fucking get it. They're seeing it as like, oh, dude, like, it's just free reign. Like, there's a civil war. Fuck it. Like, do whatever you want to do.
You just saw the other guy do it. So she's very young and impressionable. Oh, that looks cool. I could do that too. I want to be one of the guys. You know, so.
But also, like, really I didn't notice.
As but Lily was like, going. Oh, she, okay, so, like, spoiler thing, too, Kirsten Dunst does not make it in the end in this.
That was dumb, too.
Jesse.
I saw this coming a mile away, too. She was talking about the three-wheel.
I thought Jesse was going to die, but I don't know, but oh, well.
No.
No, because it was, like, passing the baton off even earlier on. Dang. Like, when Kirsten Dunst took the picture of her friend that died in the backseat, and then I was like, damn, like, yeah, she really doesn't give a fuck. But then she deleted it. I was like, ah, she's turning, you know, like a new leaf.
Yeah.
And then when they finally got to
EZ, turn a new leaf, it's like, time to die.
it kind of felt like she was having like a mental breakdown when she was in DC. She was like, not about being there. But Jesse was like right there in front getting all the shots. So it was like a passing in the torch. But
gotcha.
That's what I thought it was really cool. You didn't like it after all?
No. I just think it's... Yeah. It was like, okay, this is just a movie. Because, like, when Kirsten Dunst runs and, like, pushes her, why the fuck are you standing? You know what's behind you. That's why you jump to save the girl.
You just dive. Yeah. And then, like,
Just roll. Soccer goal and dive through.
But, like, no, Lily is watching it. And she's like, that Jesse girl got both those people killed. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
But that's what's interesting about Kirsten Dunst, her character and her arc, though. And it made it sound like earlier when Jesse's like, hey, if I died or got shot, would you take that picture? And she's like,
yeah.
What do you think? So I was thinking to myself, yeah, so she would because she's a bitch and she's only in it for the job and the shots and all that.
Yeah.
But then at that moment, she's deciding to save her. Like, she's not going to take the picture, actually. She's going to intervene. And ironically, that's what costs her life and all that. So I thought that was really sad. I was like, God. And then I was thinking, holy crap, did Jesse know this was going to happen? Did she jump out there on purpose, knowing that Lee was going to jump in there and get shot? Because by the time she's on the ground, she's already taking the pictures. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's possible, but
I think she baited her in.
I just thought that was really cool. That's possibly.
I don't think she did it on purpose. I think she just because there are like multiple times she almost got killed earlier.
They're moving so quickly in that moment, though, for her to fall on the ground and then know that the person above her is getting shot, then I got to take that picture. It's going to be a good shot.
Earlier on in the movie, she's like, "Oh, I froze. I didn't take a picture. I'll never do that again."
Yeah,
like, she does say that. So.
Yeah,
that's a good callback.
You know what,
that's the case.
What's like that? I mean, it's crazy for like the military people to be like they're following them around the whole time. And like they keep pulling him back every once in a while. Like if you're like one of the soldiers or whatever, you're just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying too. It's like, why would you give a shit? Yeah. I'm just gonna go in there. If you get killed, that's on you, but whatever. Yeah.
Standard training, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting into if you're gonna follow us through here. So like enter at your own risk kind of thing.
The journalists are a huge liability, too, because, like, if the soldiers are worrying about them, that means they have less attention on the enemy ahead of them and all that stuff, too. So it's like...
Especially if you're trying to sneak on somebody.
That's frustrating. Yeah.
Extra people making noises, you know, the camera's taking
pictures.
Well,
I thought, too, okay, I need to know if this is just like a movie thing or if it's like, because I assume like in real life, like if journalists are following you around, you're probably like kind of near the back, like you're not right near the front of the
I can't fighting. I think that close. Yeah,
I think this was just for the movie.
I don't know.
Like, they were right.
They were like a soldier. Like they were like next in line between the soldiers.
Exactly.
Actually.
Yeah. I was like, what? There's that part at the end too, where they drag Nick Offerman out from behind the desk, and he's like, "Wait, I need a quote." And I'm thinking, I was like, "There's no way in real life they would just immediately go," and then that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to save with the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, from that interaction, yeah, it definitely feels like the president was in the wrong in this movie.
Yeah. They mentioned...
It seems like it, yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned he's in his third term. Him. He used airstrikes against...
On, people.
On citizens.
Homeland.
So, like,
yeah.
So I'm assuming...
So they
I can only assume there must be, like, maybe he's using them against, like, protesters or something like that, or I don't know, because, like, I'm trying to imagine... the scenario that would it's got to be that or something but
they locked into interpretation.
So like again, like I didn't hate the movie, but I was
would you recommend people watch it?
I recommend people seeing it at least once. If you don't see it in theaters, you're I feel like you're not missing like a huge thing. If you see it streaming, like I've seen it, I don't regret seeing it, but I probably won't like go buy it or rent it or anything, you know.
Okay.
I've heard that from a couple people who, some people like really like this movie, but they're like, I don't want to see it again though. But that's because like it like made them so stressed out,
like uncomfortable and stuff.
Yeah,
but that's when you know movies.
I see that. Yeah, that's how I am with Hereditary. I love Hereditary.
Oh yeah, no.
I don't know if I can watch that again. Not by myself, at least. If I'm with you guys, maybe we're having some beers, I guess, but.
I think, if we're at home.
Yeah, this movie could definitely stick with you if you let it.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy at times, unsettling, you know, stuff like that. I mentioned my own Instagram reviews, at least. It kind of reminds me of, like, Sicario. I got a lot of those sort of vibes.
I got a lot of the whole movie. Yeah, Fury. Yeah, I see what I just kept thinking of the Nightcrawler movie. Like, that's all I thought about
awesome,
this movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. That's a good one. Yeah.
That's like, every time it was like Nightcrawler with Walking Dead to me.
I love like, Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Well,
I do too. I think that's what caught me off guard. I was like, oh, like, anything for the shot. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that, you made it that Nightcrawler.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, like filming, even filming his call.
His buddy dying. So, that's all that was sticking with me during that. And then, like, the setting felt like Walking Dead. So maybe that's why I didn't enjoy it as much. I felt like I've just seen this stuff before. So it could be my own bias because I've already seen those things. If someone's never seen that and saw this first, I'm sure they would enjoy it more. So
gotcha. You think the trailers were a little misleading or anything like that? Did you watch the trailers?
I think so. I saw the trailer. So that's why I was shocked when we were following.
I didn't watch any trailers. Yeah,
when we were following the press, I was surprised about that. I was like, "Oh, like I thought these were just gonna be characters," but like it was really gun home. Like, no, like the whole point of this movie is for these press people to get like the ultimate shot of like, you know, war. This is the Civil War and stuff. So I was like, "Okay, I didn't know that's the angle we were going at in this movie."
Oh, okay. So maybe they illustrated that better in the trailers, at least.
Yeah, because I think I was expecting like a Walking Dead itch kind of thing. You follow a group of people going through the Civil War.
Survivors. Gotcha.
Yeah, like try to get through it.
Like a small band of your, like a Predator sort of things. Like these are the guys, these are the soldiers.
Yeah.
You don't really get that. That's right. So what the trailer scene actually was Kirsten Dunst with a voiceover saying like, oh, I've been photographing wars for years. Yeah, I've seen a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And nothing prepared me for something like this. Something like that, right? It's like, I was like, oh, okay. Something so she's like, a photographer. Oh, okay. She's documenting the war. Okay. And she's a protagonist. Gotcha.
He was maybe with my mother in the Amazon.
I was
looking for spiders.
He was with my mother in the Amazon when she died.
No.
that movie.
Oh god.
Well, we're gonna have to end this, but before we go, we'll just do like plugs and promotions. Matt, do you have anything you want to promote?
Yeah, my Instagram at least, at Matthew Gaffstar. I do a lot of movie reviews. I think this weekend as Abigail. It's like a sort of a like a vampire movie, I guess, something like that. So that might be cool. It's got a really good cast too. Giancarlo Esposito is in there too, so
nice.
I gotta watch that.
Yeah,
and, yeah. I like to do stuff like that. You're on. Nice. Tell us about yourself, Ron.
Yeah, Ron. Yeah.
I'm on basically all platforms as at that moron. Do a lot of comedy things, a lot of music stuff. So if you're into that kind of stuff, come check me out.
Nice. And for myself, I am on Twitch. You can see me at Yo Soy Farrell. It's F-A-R-R-E-L-L. Twitch.tv. I am still fighting on the Helldivers front. Yeah. So if you want to watch me in there, that'd be cool. I tend to stream probably like twice a week. I'll put a schedule on there soon. But anyway, if you like the show, then, you know, go ahead and leave a review. If you didn't, then thank you for listening for like an hour or something to not
giving
like
us a
it.
Chance at least.
Yeah.
Before we get asked. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. So we will see you guys later then. All right. Bye.
Bye, guys.